Welcome, everyone, and thank you for coming out on this beautiful spring morning. I want to talk this morning about something called the order of interbeing. This weekend, here at the center, we had a retreat, a weekend retreat, for members within our own community, the Florida Community of Mindfulness, who are members of the Order of Interbeing. In our community, Florida Community of Mindfulness, we have probably close to 35 or 40 people who are either ordained in the order or aspirants in the Order of Interbeing. And they really function as very much the core of our community. And this order of interbeing, the title interbeing sort of has a Star Trek kind of Star Wars kind of connotation. I mean, Thich Nhat Hanh, when he was, and I'll share with you what it actually meant in Vietnamese, but when he came up, tried to come up with something or to call it in English, I think he didn't realize the kind of connotations of names like that might have. To many people in our culture, intergalactic. So I wanted to spend a little time just talking about the meaning of the order. And again, this order historically was founded in founded by Thich Nhat Hanh. I think most people are familiar with Thich Nhat Hanh. He's quite a well-known Buddhist teacher, internationally known. A Buddhist teacher, writer, awakened teacher. And so he founded this order in the mid-60s in Vietnam. He founded it really by himself and six very close young students of his. Buddhism was well established in Vietnam. The institution and practices of Vietnam, of Buddhism, and various lineages were all well established, deeply established in the life of the Vietnamese. And yet, in the 60s, he felt the need to create kind of a new kind of energy within Buddhism, to kind of update it to modern times, and to really bring it alive again. And so this order of interbeing, or as it's called in Vietnamese, Thiệp Hiền, was where he began. I mean, he had been doing a lot individually, but this was kind of his organizational response. But as you know, in the mid-60s, the war was ravaging his country. He very shortly after its founding had to go into exile for his life. And so therefore, it did not take root. But yet, the basic trainings of it and teachings of it, he kept with him. And in the mid-80s, he began, because there were people who had heard about it, were interested in it, he began to ordain people in the order again. And now it has thousands of members all around the world. It's an international order. And again, we have a group here that's the core of our community. So I want to share a little bit. I'm reading from a book called Interbeing. I would recommend if you're interested in it. It has the charter of the Order of Interbeing. It has the 14 basic precepts or training of the Interbeing, and most importantly, has Thich Nhat Hanh's commentary on these explanations on these. So if you're interested, I would certainly recommend that you get this book. So I want to spend a few minutes, because I think it's really relevant to us, because I think it's very meaningful. The name of the order, Thiệp Hiền in Vietnamese, he defined Thiệp, T-I-E-P, as being in touch with, continuing. And he defined Hiền, meaning realizing and making it here and now. So I want to just spend a little time talking about the relevance of these words to us. So obviously, the first question would be being in touch. What are we supposed to be in touch with? And what he's getting at here is we are to be in touch with reality. Very interesting that you have to found a new Buddhist order to be in touch with reality. You'd think, well, I mean, most people, unless they have a bona fide psychiatric diagnosis, such as psychotic or schizophrenic or something, would say most of us are in touch with reality. And yet, he founds a new order whose primary mission is to help people get in touch with reality. So we have to ask ourselves, what is reality? Right? Right? We read the news, right? That gives us, tells us what's going on in the world. Right? We see things, we hear things, we eat things. Aren't we all in touch with the world? Aren't we in touch with reality? And most of us would say, yeah, I'm not psychotic. I'm not hallucinating. I'm in touch with reality. But we're really not in touch with reality. Most of us are in touch with our own mentally fabricated reality. It's not a real reality. Right? So when we want to get in touch with reality, we have to go beyond our self-constructed mental reality through which we are perceiving what we think is reality. Is that clear? So many of us, we have, for example, we have a story about ourselves, right? Which we think is real, right? This is who I am. I was born here, then this happened to me, and that happened to me, and this happened to me, and that happened to me, and this happened to me, and that happened to me, and this happened to me, and that happened to me, and this is, and this is the meaning of this, and this is the meaning of that, and I carry that, that whole definition of who and what I am as my reality. This is who I am. Right? Everybody know what I'm talking about. But none of that is real. In reality. Those are just, mental fabrications, images that we hold on to from 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, I don't know who our oldest person is here. And we think that's the reality of who I am. When you understand what reality is, you understand that's not true at all. And when you look deeply into your own mind and thoughts, you see even the reality of thoughts and feelings and perceptions are not very real, are they? Why not? Because they have no substance. They just come and go. They're here and gone, and we look at situation this way, and we look at the situation that way, and then we go back and look at it this way, then we go back and look at it that way, and then we think it's good and bad and right and wrong. And it's endlessly all over the place. So, as well as when we look at life and other people, do we really see them? Do we really see them? Are we in touch with reality? When we eat our food, are we in touch? I mean, very simple. Are we in touch with the taste of our food? When we see another human being, are we really seeing them? Or are we seeing our thoughts about them, our judgments about them, our ideas about them, who and what they are? You see, so we're endlessly creating this fabrication about ourselves and the world. And for some of us, it could be a good story, not so good a story, but it's all a story. There's no depth to it. There's no real meaning to it. Right? I mean, I was a psychotherapist for many years. What do you help people do? Change their story. Right? They go into therapy and they have a bad story about themselves, and hopefully when they come out of therapy, they'll have a good story about themselves. And they'll feel better. I mean, that's good. But it's still a story, isn't it? Reality is not a story. This is reality. And again, in terms of our own who and what we are, our reality for most of us is very surface. Right? We are lost in the world of thoughts and concepts and ideas and beliefs, and, right? Which is just the surface of our own mind. It's just always bubbling. You know, it's like, you know, the so-called waves on the ocean. Right? You know, the wind blows the water this way, and there are waves this way and that way. Currents and waves always, sometimes calm, sometimes rough, sometimes it's always blowing. But if anybody's ever gone scuba diving, anybody ever go scuba diving? What do you learn about the ocean? The surface that we see when we're on top is not what's really going on, is there? Not only is there a depth to the ocean, but there's a whole kind of life that's unfolding in the ocean that we never see, because we're where? On the surface. And we just think the surface of things is reality. So the first order of the order of interbeing is to get in touch with reality. Yeah, a lot can be said about that, but I think it's very important that we understand that the real purpose of the study and the practice of meditation is to know reality as it is. The second, another meaning, he says, of tiep is continuation, continuing. We are here today because we are a continuation of a body of practice and teaching that goes back to the Buddha. And it is only here today, we are only here today in this building practicing, talking what we're talking about because of our connection to that body of teaching and lineage that has been continued for 2,600 years. And so he also talks about, as part of this order, it is not only awakening to reality and knowing reality and living from reality and really touching the source of reality, which is the wellspring of all positive mind states. It's not only that, but we also have a purpose of continuing that, right? If it gets lost in the world, if these teachings and practices get lost in the world, if they die out, then what have we really left to our children and grandchildren and future generations? Right? We've left the shell of life, but it is empty, because the real meaning of life has not been transmitted, has not been continued. So that's all in tiep. And I don't even speak Vietnamese, so I'm just going on what Thich Nhat Hanh has presented. Hien, he says, means realizing and making it here and now. So this is very important. And again, it's important for lots of reasons, but especially for us as Americans, and especially many of those who are interested in spiritual matters and interested or in Buddhism or meditation, we tend to be, for want of a better word, intellectuals. Right? We are very much people of our intellect, right? We like ideas, and many of us, we're here because we like spiritual ideas, spiritual ideals, religious ideals. So we are often very conversant with the ideology and theology and ideas and concepts of love and compassion and understanding and emptiness and pain. We can recite it quite well. And we can think about it quite often. And we can reflect on it quite often. But the reason the second word, yin, is in the title of the order, because it means realization. We have to realize the meaning in our life. Okay? Or else it is really sort of ultimately useless to us. Right? We have to become that which we think about, reflect on, and talk about. We have to become truly compassionate human beings who live from a compassionate mind, a loving mind, an understanding mind, a wise mind, an intelligent mind, a patient mind, right? So, all those qualities have to be realized. Realized means we live them, right? Or else they don't have the power to transform. We have to let these practices work their transformative magic, and we can only do it when we get it inside and bring it into our life. I was talking to people earlier this week in one of our intensives on the Bodhisattva Way, and somebody was sharing in these calls we have, just sort of things that had happened them in the week, sort of, and how, having been practicing now in this intensive, they noticed that a situation that in the past would have, driven them up a tree, they were calm with. They were relaxed with. Or some other sort of difficult situation of a death and a loss that in the past would have just caused a lot of emotionality, they were very kind of calm and present to. And they were kind of presenting these things as sort of small victories. And my response to them was, no. You see, we often see our spiritual life and our development in this sort of cartoonish Marvel comic kind of, good versus evil. It all is going to unfold on a grand scale. Right? It's enlightenment versus ignorance. We're waiting for that great battle. It'll finally be settled, and we will enter the world of the enlightened ones. And all will be good. And our hearts will be filled with love and ease and understanding for all beings. We sort of think like this. But that's not the way it unfolds. Our spiritual values, our meditative life, unfolds in reality. And what is our reality as human beings? This is our reality. And it unfolds moment to moment. Right? When we get up in the morning till the time we go to sleep, our life is unfolding. Moment to moment, experience and experience. It is in that the spiritual life unfolds. Does not unfold in some other alternative reality of even a meditative reality, right? You know, very much in the Buddhist tradition, we do loving kindness meditation. Many of you may be familiar with loving kindness meditation, where in our meditation, we visualize various people, the world, send them love, send them kindness, send them wishes that they don't suffer. You know what I'm saying? All that. It's all good, isn't it? But then I say, but that's not the practice of loving kindness. Right? The practice of loving kindness goes on in the world with real people. You see? If we think the practice of loving kindness is something that just goes on in our meditation cushion in the privacy of our own mind and our ideal little world, and we generate love, and then we go out in the world and we hate this one, we don't like this one, we're disturbed by this one, we're pissed off at that one, you know. But then we go home. We shut the door. We sit on our cushion. We read a little Dharma. And we do our loving kindness meditation. Now again, there is a reason to practice loving kindness, compassion, all the things we practice in our mind on our meditation cushion. It is to transform the mind. So it is that mind of loving kindness, that mind of compassion, that we take into the world. Right? That's what it's about. There has to be realization. We have to realize in our life all the ideals that we aspire to. And the final, his interpretation of Hien is here and now. Right? Another hard thing for us. And it's just sort of a variation on what I just talked about. Life only unfolds in the here and now. What is the here and now? This is the here and now. All of us are alive right now in this. Anything that has happened prior to this moment, you just have a memory of, right? It's not real. Anything that you're anticipating that may be happening at any time from now on is also not real. Is that clear? Only this is real. Now. This is the important thing. If we want to change, if we want to be a better person, right? Anybody here want to be a better person? That's why we're here. We all want to be better people. And we look forward to the day when we'll be better people. Right? In the same way, how many of us would like a better world? Yes. And we look forward to the day when there will be a better world, don't we? But that better person and that better world can only be created now. It can't be created in the future, because the future doesn't exist. The future will only exist when it becomes now. That sounds a little strange, but I think, are you with me on that one? You understand? Yeah. Okay. So if we want to be a more peaceful person in the future, we have to what? Become a peaceful person right now. If we want to be a more understanding person in the future, we have to become an understanding person right now, more loving person right now, more peaceful person right now, more calmer person right now, more accepting person right now. In Buddhism, in the teachings on karma and cause and effect, we say cause and effect is one. Ordinary human beings are only concerned about the effects. I want this, I want this, I want this, I want this, I want this. Buddhist practitioners are concerned about making the cause. They understand when you make the cause for that, then that will happen. Right. So that is why, if you want a peaceful world, we have to what? Make causes for a peaceful world. What's the most immediate cause that I can make? Becoming a peaceful person. I want a world free of anger. Anybody want? We're signing up. Anybody would like a world free of anger and violence? And hatred and intolerance and fanaticism and narrowness? Anybody would like a world like that? All right. So that's an effect we'd like to see in the world. What's going to bring that about? You know, I have to become a person free of anger, free of hatred, free of intolerance, free of narrowness, free of judgment, free of non-acceptance. Isn't that true? Because that's a cause to create an effect. So, understanding that change only occurs in the here and now gives us kind of the key here. Many of us might have wondered why over these years of our spiritual reading and our spiritual talking and our spiritual listening and our, you know, we still have not created the effect that we wanted to see within ourselves. Right? We all know that. Well, why is that? Because we have not created the causes for that to unfold. So we have to do that. So, you know, I could go on and on, but I wanted to speak a little bit about some of the trainings. But any questions about... So, I mean, you can kind of see in my little brief explanation of Tiapien, the word interbeing doesn't quite capture it. But so it is called, the order of interbeing. In English, in Vietnamese, they still call it Tiapien. Are there any questions in terms of what's been shared so far? Good. I think it's all self-explanatory. So again, I mean, this book is called Interbeing, 14 Guidelines for Engaged Buddhism by Thich Nhat Hanh. And if you're interested in kind of learning more about it, reading more of his commentary, it is available. So, one of the other key pieces of this order is that it has these 14 trainings. These 14, in other words, if we want to have an effect, well, what are the means to create those effects, right? And so for most of us, we understand that in our life, we need certain guidelines, certain principles that we're kind of, you know, running our life on, right? You know, so we know in our training, you see, the effect of practice is eventually to become a totally awakened human being, a totally realized human being, a person whose mind and heart only dwell in wholesomeness, a mind that is free of all afflictions, and really understands the true nature of reality. A Buddha, a bodhisattva, we say in Buddhism. So that's an effect. That's, you know, how do you get there? What are the causes that will create that effect? Right. And so there are these guidelines, these 14 trainings that Thich Nhat Hanh developed early on to guide the people in the order in how to live, begin to live a more awakened life, to create the positive effects that they seek. Now, what I'm going to be sharing with you is a early version. For those of you who are familiar with the 14 trainings, or if you went online and looked up the 14 trainings of the Order of Interbeing, Tiepien, you would find them much more elaborated. Because since he established the order, they have been revised and gotten bigger and bigger. This is a very early version, and I think it's kind of comes to the essence. So very interestingly, I think, in the traditional formulation of Buddhist morality, what it's called, or ethics, or right, or training, in action, right action, there are five precepts or trainings, of which the first is not to kill, and protect life, and not to steal. You know, sort of the major kind of large actions of body and speech that obviously cause a lot of harm in life and to oneself. Interestingly, in these 14 trainings, he begins in a very different way. The first training he calls openness. Do not be idolatrous about or bound to any doctrine, theory, or ideology, even Buddhist one. Buddhist systems of thought are guiding means. They are not absolute truth. I mean, that's fascinating. But that's the first precept of this order, of this Buddhist order. You know? I mean, not too many religions today begin by saying, you know, don't be idolatrous or bound to any of our doctrines. Usually the message is the opposite, right? Get bound. Buddhist systems of thoughts are guiding means. They are not absolute truth. And I'll talk about this in a minute. The second mindfulness training is a variation on this, non-attachment to views. Do not think the knowledge you presently possess is changeless absolute truth. Avoid being narrow-minded and bound to present views. Learn and practice non-attachment from views in order to be open and receive others' viewpoints. Truth is found in life and not merely in conceptual knowledge. Be ready to learn throughout your entire life and to observe reality in yourself and in the world at all times. You know, very powerful, isn't it? Especially, I mean, this is back in the 60s. I mean, he obviously was a little prescient to see how the world has unfolded. But, I mean, I think a lot of this is very obvious to you and very powerful. But I think What is also of interest in looking at these is, I think this is important for all of us who are embarking or on a transformative path, a spiritual path, a healing path, a path of awakening. We come, unfortunately, to the practice, to the teachings, not as empty bowls, not as open minds. Unfortunately, we are no longer children, fresh, clear, open. Many of us, depending on how long we've been alive and the nature of our life, have accumulated lots of ideas, lots of concepts, about right and wrong and good and bad and who I am and who you are. And many of us have many identities, right? We identify. We're progressive, we're conservative, you know what I mean? This and a that and a, right? We have so many ways that we define ourselves, right? On a grand scale and also on a very personal scale. Right. We have many structures unconscious to us in our minds in the way that we define ourselves. Okay. What's it like? It's like somebody tells you there's a great new restaurant in town. You know, people love to tell you about a great new restaurant, really good food. Now, really great food, delicious food. Now, do you want to go there on an empty stomach or a full stomach? Think about it, right? You know, I'm going out to dinner, really new dinner. I'm really going to tank up with a lot of food before I go. You know? That would kind of ruin the experience, wouldn't it? No. We'd like to go a little hungry, wouldn't we? Yeah, so we really can taste it, really feel good, and be filled with all this good, nourishing food. But many of us don't realize when we come to our spiritual path, our transformative path, we come full, or pretty full. And there's really very little room for anything new to get in there. And we don't even know that, you see. We don't even know that. How can we really take in these teachings, take in these practices in a very fresh and new way? How can we look at ourselves and the world in a very fresh and new way and really be willing to kind of just let go of all our concepts, all our ideas, and just begin again, but begin on a very basic level of reality, of experience, of value and meaning that's not been imposed upon us by our conditioning, by our past, by our education and all that? I mean, it's not that that's all bad, right? It's not that that's all bad, but wouldn't it be wonderful, like a child encountering life, we encountered our spiritual path with a sense of openness and curiosity and excitement, you know? In Zen, that's called don't know mind. I don't know if anybody's heard that. Could you just turn the AC down a little bit? Don't know mind. Most of us in this society, we want to cultivate what? A no mind. We pride ourselves on how much we know. Right? Right? And we love the internet. Why do we love the internet? What? Because we can just endlessly what? Gain more information. Right? I mean, you know, anytime we get a little free time, we can just research any topic in the world we want and gather more information and more information. And more information, right? Full. Don't know mind. It's interesting that that's thought of very highly in Zen. If somebody asks you a question in our society and you say, we're sort of embarrassed to say, I don't know, right? I really don't know. What's your opinion on this? I really don't have one. People might think we're what? What? Stupid. Simpletons. And Zen, the ancient said, don't be a little fool, be a great fool. If you have a don't know mind, then you have an open mind. I don't know anything, but I'm willing to learn. And I'm willing to learn with the way it's being shared here. Very open. I'm not attached to my views. I'm interested in others' views. Anybody who watches the political dialogue that goes on in a society, is anybody interested in their opponent's views? Absolutely not. Right? And we think they're the ones who are being narrow. They're the ones who are fanatic. They're the ones who are attached to their views. Not me. Learn and practice non-attachment from views in order to be open to receive others' viewpoints. I mean, you know, this is even in, I mean, we can take it big, but this is small. This is in relationships. This is in families, right? Think about all your, this is at work. Are we open to other people's views? Or are we closed to other people's views? How many of us go into meetings and already we've made up our mind? Right? Already we've made up our mind. We know we're right and they're wrong. It's already been played out in our minds. How's anything creative going to come out of that? How anything meaningful is going to come out of that? Yeah. I may have a view, an idea, but I don't think I have the truth. There's no such thing as truth in the relative world. There's just views, right? You know, you see the flower from your side. You might talk about the flower in a very different way than I would talk about the flower because I have a different view of it. And somebody over there may have a different view of it. And somebody over there may have a different view of it. And somebody who's up there may have a different view of it. And we're going to sit around and argue about this. What is this, really? And nobody acknowledges the narrowness of our view. All of us have a narrow views. Right? None of us have a 360 view. But walking the path of awakening, walking the path of enlightenment, begins to give us a wider view. See, I need you to tell me about what this looks like from that side. You see? Because I can only see it from this side in the relative world. In the absolute world, we're all looking at the same thing. But in the relative world, we all have our different views. Based on our perceptions, based on our past, based on our conditioning, based on our culture, based on our age. I mean, there's so many conditions. Truth is only found in life. To enter life, we have to be willing to put down our views about life. Anybody ever been angry at a person, resentful at a person for something they've done? And you've thought about it, haven't you? You've ruminated about it, haven't you? And you really have them nailed, don't you? But that mental experience that you've been having within your own mind, not in reality, often have you noticed is subject to immediate change when you actually what? Are present to that person. Right? You see? Because when you're present to that person and you look right at them, you see them. And you realize that story you were running, that one-dimensional childlike story you were running in your mind is like not them, is it? Right? And then we have a choice in that moment. What's our choice? Am I going to live in reality? Or am I going to live in my thoughts, views, ideas, images about reality? Because when you see that other person free, you know, with your don't know mind, you see they are just another human being just like you. Isn't that true? Yeah. Is there anybody in here who thinks they're perfect? I mean, if you do, just you can don't be embarrassed. Because the truth is, when we're angry at somebody else, we think we are perfect, don't we? You see, we think we're perfect. We're right. They're wrong. But the truth is, when you look at another human being, you see, they're just like me. I'm just like them. Yeah, I do things that annoy other people, right? Isn't that true? Might other people not get angry at us for something? Yeah, that's true. Have we not in the course of our life ever done unskillful things? Of course. When we live in reality, the reality of ourselves and the reality of others, that's all very apparent. But if we live in the world of our own narrow views, we're lost. What are we lost in? Lost in the world of our thoughts, of our views, of our ideas. It's not a very stable world. Be ready to learn throughout your entire life and to observe reality in yourself and in the world at all times. This is a prescription for staying young. It's really wonderful. I mean, this is a child's mind, isn't it? It's a grown-up, but it's a child's mind. It's always fresh, it's always learning, it's always new, it's always open. Right? Life is very rich that way. Our mind ages not because it doesn't have this capacity. It ages because we put it in a straitjacket of the narrowness of our own views. And as I said earlier, we have pernicious views about ourself, right? How many people in here still are servants of views about themselves that they developed decades ago? Yeah. Right. I'm a this and I'm a that. And I'm not a this and I'm not a that. These are just views. None of them are real. If they were real, we could see them. Right? See, if Scott's views about himself, I could see them. But why can't I see your views about yourself, Scott? Because they're just going on in your head. And they're not even there all the time. Sometimes you have to remember your view. Get up in the morning, like, what's my view of myself? Let me remember, what are my issues in life? I've got to remember that. I'm an anxious person. All right, I've got to work on that. Got to remember that. Let me see, do I have any resentments? Anybody I'm resenting today? Got to remember that. Anything I'm feeling sad or bothered about? I've got to remember that. Can you see? See, it happens so quickly we don't realize that that's actually going on. Every morning we wake up and we have to recreate ourselves. But what if you didn't have to recreate yourself? What if you got up in the morning fresh? Brand new 24 hours. How do I want to be today? Meditation, mindfulness, develops that capacity to realize and experience and live everything I'm saying. This is not pop psychology. This is, you know, okay? It's not Wayne Dyer, good man. I mean, these are ideas, but there's a methodology to their realization. But they have to be practiced. Any comments or questions about what's been shared so far? That means everybody's in agreement?
So the views are the surface, and but what's going on underneath the water is determining the views, and that's the causes and conditions that stir up the surface. So to go to the depths and find out what is causing the surface to be turbulent can disseminate the views.
Yeah, so, right. So, but even in the realm of views and ideas and memories, right? If we want to keep our analogy going, these are still on the surface. Maybe they're not on the upper surface like you're saying, right? If anybody's ever scuba dived, it's not like you go down 3 inches and the turbulence stops, right? Especially depending on the turbulence. You may have to go down how much? What? Yeah, number of feet, right? Maybe sometimes even 10, you know, if it's very turbulent, you may have to go down 10 feet or 20 feet. I'm not sure, I'm just making that up. But, you know, right? But there's still a depth under that. There is the ground, you see, from which that all arises. And to look into, right, the causes of one's suffering is necessary. So we see what's really going on. What is the source of my attachment to my views? What is a view? Right? But it's not all that deep as we think it is. Because every condition or experience that has helped you develop whatever view you have of yourself or life is no longer happening. Is that not true? See, only this is happening. Let's just come back to this. Only this is happening. Even though there are 70, 80 people in this room, we're all very different. We all have very different stories. True? Very different lives. You know, what's going on in your life? And yet the truth is, in this moment, we're all here. You may wish you were somewhere else, but, you know. The truth is, we're all here, right now. And in this moment, all your issues, all your problems, they only exist where? In your mind, in our mind. They don't have any real existence. Now, many of us don't know that. Why is that? Because we keep it going all the time, you see? We just keep the stories going all the time. We don't just deal with the issue of whatever it is in life when we're present to that situation in life, again, where there is something to be done or not done, right? But we carry the issue, the problem with us all the time. Right? We are carrying issues with us from things that happened 30, 40 years ago. That no longer exist. Is that true? If that's true, then there's implications to that. And we need a methodology that helps us realize that truth so we can live in emotional stability. So we can live in calmness and ease. So we can truly be present to others in the way we want them to be. Is that not true? You had a question, or yes?
I like the analogy you were making with the ocean, but the way I see it is like at the top, all the thinking is up there, and down at the bottom is just the being. And when you're just being, there is no conflict because there's, you know, like all the right and the wrong stuff is up floating on the surface.
Right, but the challenge is not to see those as two separate things. The waves and the ocean are not separate.
No, it's all one.
Right, and so one has to be able to integrate so one truly lives. I mean, if one really is living from a place of being in life, then one is going through life and all the ups and downs and backs and forths and success and failures and likes and dislikes, etc., of life with ease. One doesn't have a lot of afflictive emotionality, doesn't have a lot of emotional ability. One's mind's at ease because one understands that everything is arising. Why? Because of causes and conditions. And this is not a statement of indifference or like la la la, but it's a deep understanding. We have the world we have because of causes and conditions. People are who they are because of their causes and conditions, right? Everything is the result of prior causes. If we want a different world, what? We have to make new causes. Would we like everybody to join us in making those good causes? Yeah. But, you know, most people aren't ready, aren't there, right? So we have to, each of us have to take individually the responsibility of ourselves to change the world. And we can always begin with ourselves, right? So in Buddhist teachings, what is called the absolute and the unconditioned, and the conditioned and the relative are just no different. They're just looking at things from a very different perspective, but it's the same thing. The surface of the ocean and the ocean are not separate. They're all the ocean, aren't they? But if we think the ocean is only the surface, we have an incorrect view. And if we think the bottom of the ocean is only the ocean, we have an incorrect view. We have to see the whole ocean for what it is. We have to see this whole mind for what it is. We have to see us for who we are. In Buddhism, we say everyone is inherently a Buddha. So why don't people act like Buddhas in this world? Because they don't see with the eyes of a Buddha. When they see with the eyes of a Buddha, they will be Buddhas, and they will act in enlightened ways. When they see with the mind of confusion about who and what they really are, they will act that way. And actually, today, right after this talk, which will end in just a couple of minutes, we're going to be having a little celebration with the family program. I see they're out there already, kids, celebrating the birth of the Buddha. We are here because of the Buddha. I mean, that sounds strange, doesn't it? But it's really true. One human being waking up 2,600 years ago just from that awakening and spending 50 years after that awakening teaching in a wise and coherent way the practices that help human beings awaken themselves and free themselves from the sufferings. From that one human being, you know, Buddhism, as you know, came. And it's because of all the generations since the Buddha, right, that we are here. Right? And not, and even talking about Buddhism, but like take something like mindfulness. You know, these days mindfulness is so big throughout or in our culture, right? Well, mindfulness comes from Buddhism. That's where all these people got it from. So today's his birthday. And we're going to have a little meaningful celebration, little ceremonial of that in the garden. And everyone here is welcomed to join us and then stay for pizza afterwards. So there is an historical meaning to the Buddha's birthday. But in a more deeper level, we have to understand it's a very significant event. Because a human being, just like us, growing up in a situation where his life was conditioned by his environment, his parents, his upbringing, his culture, to be a certain way, at some point in his 20s, saw through it all and embarked upon his own spiritual path to really understand what is the meaning of life, who and what am I, why do human beings suffer, right? And at the end of that six-year journey, very personal individual journey, I had a great awakening, a great understanding, a great enlightenment. In which everything became clear. And he did that with his own body and mind, the same body and mind that you and I have. So the birth of a Buddha, the birth of a Buddha is not just an historical event, right? It's something very meaningful to each of us, that each of us have that capacity within ourselves. We all have that Buddha nature, that true mind, underneath the surface. And that all of us can awaken to that. And use the depth of our mind to transform ourselves and transform the world. So sort of acknowledgement of that, we're going to have this sweet, meaningful celebration for about 30 minutes in the garden. I think it starts about 5 minutes after we end today, and everyone is invited. So thank you, Alan.